BSC in adults. Linzess works differently than laxatives to help relieve belly pain and let you have more frequent and complete bowel movements. Individual results may vary. Do not give to children less than 6, and it should not be given to children 6 to less than 18. It may harm them. Do not take Linzess if you have a bowel blockage. Get immediate help if you develop unusual or severe stomach pain, especially with bloody or black stools. The most common side effect is diarrhea, sometimes severe. If it's severe, stop taking Linzess and call your doctor right away. Other side effects include gas, stomach area pain, and swelling. Talk to your doctor today. You may be able to save on Linzess and make fewer trips to the pharmacy. See if you're eligible to pay as little as $30 for 90 days. Visit Linzess.com or call 1-800-LINZESS. Sponsored by AbbVie and Ironwood Pharmaceuticals.
Rich Thomas Weather, a service of Wiley Sanders Truck Lines, a company placing God and family first. Great home time and great benefits with highly competitive pay. Wiley Sanders Truck Lines. Call them today.
Rich Thomas Weather.
Well, hi, everybody. Some interesting weather changes ahead. We've got scattered showers and thunderstorms possible tonight. Overnight low temperature 64. But tomorrow, high near 80. Thunderstorms become likely. Some of the storms strong, possibly severe. We're in a marginal severe weather risk. Damaging wind gusts would be the main threat. Then behind that, windy and sharply cooler on Thursday. I'm talking about high temperatures only in the upper 50s. We'll be in the mid-30s by dawn Friday with patchy frost, a late season cool snap. From the Blue Water Weather Center, this is Rich Thomas.
Buying or building a new home comes with many difficult decisions. The mortgage process shouldn't be one of them. Let CBNS Bank's experienced mortgage lenders make the process easy. Visit a CBNS Bank office or cbsbank.com. All loans subject to credit approval. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
The following is a paid program by Earnest Financial. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and other contributors. These do not necessarily represent those of Liberty Acquisitions 825, Blue Water Broadcasting, its management, staff, or any advertisers.
This is the Health and Wealth Radio Network.
Time once again for the legal disclaimer.
All matters discussed during the Health and Wealth Show are for informational purposes only. Each individual situation may vary, and the opinions expressed here may not apply to everyone. All materials presented by that ruggedly handsome David Ernest are believed to be from reliable sources, and no representations can be made as to their accuracy. All ideas and information should be discussed in detail with one of our highly qualified representatives prior to implementation. And that is your legal disclaimer.
Is your money working for you? Would you like higher returns with lower risks? David Ernest of Ernest Financial Retirement Rollovers has custom-tailored strategies. With over 30 years in the industry, let him help you achieve your dreams. Ernest Financial, where they are always earnest about your money. Visit retirewithernest.com or call 279-7431. That's 279-7431. Ernest Financial.
This is your roving reporter, and today I am talking with a mime.
Hello!
I thought mimes didn't talk.
I'm on my break, man.
Well, could you show us some of the things you mimes do?
Sure, man. Here I am, trapped in a box.
I see.
And now I'm walking against the wind, man.
Okay, what's that thing you're doing now?
I'm calling my friend David Ernest to see how my mime money is doing today.
David Ernest is your financial guy?
Yes, he is. And you know you can call him yourself at 279-7431 or 205-479-0839 if you were in the Birmingham area.
I see. So I guess you would gladly recommend David Ernest.
Yeah, man. He has the mime seal of approval.
So for a great asset preservationist, call David Ernest.
That's right, man.
What are you doing now?
I'm still on break.
Got another one of those?
Yeah, man. Help yourself.
Beautiful day.
For slap out, it ain't half bad.
From our super secret studio, which tonight is located at Mr. Gus's, David Ernest is proud to present the Health and Wealth Show. And tonight is our town hall meeting with Congressman Mo Brooks. So now let's go live to Mr. Gus's and David Ernest.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Rusty. And we are live here at Mr. Gus's. We got a crowd of folks here who want to ask Mo Brooks some questions. Thank you for being live with us, Mo Brooks, Congressman Brooks.
My pleasure, David. Everything working okay on your end?
Everything sounds really, really good, Congressman. We hear you very well. Thank you so much.
David, you got a little scuffing on your mic there. I don't know what it is, but it's not. I don't know if you're too close to the.
Okay, how about this? Is it better?
No.
Okay.
A little bit of static.
Just a little static.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me, though?
I can understand you, yes.
All right. Okay. So, again, thank you so much for joining us tonight. And we have a crowd of folks here who are very interested in asking you some questions. We understand that you're running for Senate, and we're very, very glad of that. And I have a few questions I wanted to start off with. But the first thing I want to do is say congratulations on your decision, because we do need someone in Washington to represent us. And we believe that you could do that. Congressman, I want to ask you, what experience do you have regarding politics and law?
How much time do you have?
Well, just make it short.
I'll do my best. Well, I graduated from Alabama Law School in 1978. I was a prosecutor in the Tuscaloosa District Attorney's Office and then Madison County District Attorney. Most of my adult lifehood, I've had two jobs. For instance, as a legislator, that's a part-time position. The bulk of my income came from my private practice. When I was a county commissioner in Madison County for about 14 years, the bulk of my income again came from my private practice. I've litigated in most of the states of the United States of America. I was chief litigation counsel for a company out of Wisconsin, a great client to have, ABC Supply, America's largest distributor of roofing, windows, siding. And it was a pleasure working for them. And when they needed help around the country, I was the one who was assigned either to litigate the case or to retain local counsel. So that kind of gives you an idea of my background on the law side. On the political side, I was elected four times to the state legislature, served 9 years, elected to the Madison County Commission four times, served 14 years, if my memory serves me correctly. And I've been elected six times to the United States Congress, and I'm now in my 11th year. So that's my public service background and my legal career, where, quite frankly, most of my income came from.
That's very good. Okay, I'm going to start asking, letting other folks ask some questions, and then we'll get back to me asking some questions. Anyone in here have a question for Congressman Brooks? I know you said you had one. Okay, that we got a lady who's trying to hide in the back of the room here, who's already admitted to me that she had some questions here. So give us your name, please.
Valerie James.
Valerie James has some questions for you, Congressman.
All right, now Valerie's kind of soft, so you need to get that microphone close, or she's going to need to speak out loud.
Okay, you're going to speak up a little bit. Okay.
We now have, 51 executive orders from our president. And one of the things he's been talking about now is the vaccine passport and also the confiscation of guns. And I want to know exactly what is being set up there and what your opinion of this is. And that's it right now.
that's the question for right now.
Let me kind of define my role as United States Congressman. My principal duty is to vote on things that are brought to the House floor. Right now, Nancy Pelosi controls what I get to vote on. So as a consequence, I'm voting against a whole bunch of bad legislation. Nancy Pelosi will not give me the opportunity to vote on any of these executive orders by Joe Biden. Quite frankly, these executive orders, to the extent that they're going to be reversed or undercut in some way, that will have to be in a court of law by people who are adversely affected by the court order. So that's where the redress needs to be. Occasionally, you will have state governments that are engaged in this litigation process. By way of example, Joe Biden unilaterally hurt our country by canceling the Keystone Pipeline. I believe that was a horrible decision for national security, for energy independence, but nonetheless, that's what Joe Biden did. There are attorney generals from various states who either have or will be filing a lawsuit contesting those executive orders. Now, there are a lot of executive orders by Joe Biden, yes, much like there were a lot of executive orders by Barack Obama, under the Obama-Biden 8-year term in the White House. We'll have to see what else he comes up with. Obviously, there are radical left-wing socialist-type policies that he's advocating. Obviously, there are policies to strip us of our Second Amendment right to bear arms. And we'll have to see how all this plays out in a court of law. I'm cautiously optimistic that we will be successful in reversing a lot of these court orders, these executive orders through court orders, but only time will give us the answer to that.
Thank you very much. Anyone else have a question? Yes, sir.
I'm Jack Jackson. Some people know me as Deist, but Congressman Brooks, I would like to ask you, how important is your experience in law in protecting the people of Alabama from the unconstitutional mandates and things that are coming out of Washington? Because we feel vulnerable down here, and we want someone who is involved. And I kind of get a vibe from you that you will be available to the people of Alabama as a senator, as you are as a congressman.
Well, when you have legislation that is enacted into law, ultimately that legislation results in litigation in a court of law, okay? So it helps to have been a litigator in a courtroom so that you can better understand how plaintiffs and defendants, how criminals and prosecutors and how judges look at the language that is in a statute. With that understanding, then you're better positioned to be able to try to make sure that the language in a statute is what best reflects the intent of the legislative body that is passing that statute. And when I talk about my litigation experience in the 1980s, I did some criminal defense. I did a lot of normal general law practice things beginning in 1992. That's when I became a commercial litigator. And more often than not, it was business versus business involving some kind of commercial dispute for the next 18 years. That's where I was litigating around the country. And then, of course, once I became a United States congressman, I had to give up my law practice, much to my wife's chagrin, I should add, because our income was cut in half to serve in the United States Congress at a time when we had a couple of kids in college. But all the kids have graduated now. I don't want to suggest that I'm dissatisfied with the compensation that a congressman gets. That's fine. I'm doing it. It was enough to cause me to do it, even though it did cut my income in half. But all of this background in the legal field better prepares you to legislate in the legislature when I was there or in the United States Congress. It's not a requirement that you have that kind of legal training. Please don't get me wrong, but if you don't have that kind of legal training, then you're more apt to have to rely on what other people tell you the legislation will do, as opposed to you being able to, through your legal training, better understand what it's actually going to do on your own without having to rely on that outside advice.
That's very good. Very good response. Anyone else have a question? I know someone's dying to ask a question here. Oh, John, okay.
I'm Jan Caterino, Congressman. I was wondering, are there any states that are investigating the elections and the machines from the last, of course, presidential election? And are there any legislatures taking action against governors that overrode their laws concerning state voting laws? Thank you.
I don't know of any action that is being taken by a legislative body against any elected official. Now, in Georgia, the legislature passed laws that hopefully will make our election system more secure. And they did strip the Secretary of State of some of the responsibilities that the Secretary of State normally have administering election law. In Arizona, there is an investigation underway. There were subpoenas by the legislature to the election officials. The election officials refused to comply with those subpoenas. Ultimately, the legislature was able to get a court order after January 6th, after Joe Biden was determined to be the winner. And those voting machines, the processes are being investigated in the state of Arizona. There are other states that are conducting their own investigations into election processes, particularly in Pennsylvania, which was a very troublesome state that ignored Article 1, Section 4 of the United States Constitution, the election clause, in a variety of different ways. For those who are not familiar with the election clause, the United States Constitution is pretty succinct. It says that legislatures and Congress have the authority to determine the times, places, and manner of elections. And so when you had these Secretary of States who unilaterally did things that were inconsistent with or not permitted by the state legislature, or when, say, in Pennsylvania, you had the Pennsylvania Supreme Court overrule legislative acts relating to the elections, or in Georgia, where you had the Secretary of State enter into a settlement agreement with Stacey Abrams that was ratified by a judge, all of those things are illegal under the United States Constitution because you have other people or entities or officials who are countermanding what the Constitution says is in the purview of legislative bodies and the United States Congress. We did recently, a couple of weeks ago, get a favorable court opinion out of Michigan. In Michigan, a court has determined that the Secretary of State violated the laws of Michigan relating to which absentee ballots you count and which ones you don't count and the process you use to determine the two. And so that was kind of a slap on the wrist of the Secretary of State of the state of Michigan. But unfortunately, the court order prevents that Secretary of State or a subsequent Secretary of State of violating the same state statutes, and it did nothing to affect the outcome of the election or the reported results in the presidential race going retrospectively back to December 3rd and January 6th, the Electoral College vote day.
That sounds like a very good response to that question. Corky, did you have a question?
Yes, sir. Okay, you might want
to just... Hey, Congressman Corky Hawthorne here, attorney in Montgomery, Alabama. Where are you with President Trump? And why should the people of Alabama promote you from congressman to the U.S. Senate?
Well, Donald Trump and I are in real good shape. I'm not at liberty to discuss all the things that Donald Trump and I have discussed. You can imagine that it might not fall too well on the President of the United States if I were to start disclosing our one-on-one communication. So please forgive me if I don't go into any of the substance of those conversations, except to say that we've had at least three or four conversations in the last month or so, all of them related to this United States Senate race. We may have touched on some other issues in addition to the Senate race. I think a good signal as to where the Trump team is was by Stephen Miller, who was Donald Trump's speechwriter and public policy guru in the White House for the full 4 years, with a specialty in border security. And he was at my announcement and he strongly endorsed me for the United States Senate. And he also stated that I was the number one congressman having Donald Trump's back during Donald Trump's 4 years in office. And so you would expect with that kind of relationship and the way that I've supported President Trump during that 4 year period of time, in particular the policies of Donald Trump, that he's appreciative. And time will tell if he decides to do anything in this United States Senate race in Alabama. And if he does, who will end up endorsing? We're going to have a number of candidates. I don't know who all is going to enter the field. Right now, it's two. Donald Trump probably will weigh in, but I can't say that he will weigh in. He has a way of making his own mind up and announcing his decision at his own time, in his own place, and in his own manner. So we'll see how that plays out. Now, why might you want me to be in the United States Senate? Well, let me tell you who doesn't want me in the United States Senate. So if you're a socialist, you don't want to vote for Mo Brooks, okay? If you're one of these amoral people who don't know the difference between a man and a woman, who thinks that it's okay for a man to pretend to be a woman to compete in women's athletics, taking up playing time and scholarships for women, well, then you probably don't want to vote for Mo Brooks, okay? Because I'm not a science denier. I know what the difference is between a man and a woman. And when you have Title IX sports reserved for women athletes, we should not allow men to pretend to be women and compete against those women athletes because, like it or not, on average, men have a competitive advantage because of physical strength, physical size, endurance, just go down the list of physical attributes that men often, usually, but not always have over women. So that's where I am on that. If you're an amoral person, you don't want to vote for Mo Brooks. If you believe in moral values, so do I, and that's the way I conduct myself. If you don't like socialism and you like free enterprise, then you do want to vote for Mo Brooks. If you believe in border security, you do want to vote for Mo Brooks. If you believe in the foundational principles that have combined to make America the greatest nation in world history, then you do want to vote for Mo Brooks. Bottom line is this. This is the one thing that will probably distinguish me from all other candidates running for the United States Senate. I have a track record you can look at. And if you are a principled conservative, there's not going to be anyone else in the race who can say, yeah, look at what I've done. That's the indicator of what I'm going to do. Now, there'll be lots of candidates who say the conservative things, but there'll only be one candidate who can point to an extensive track record on public policy issues relating to what the United States government does and can prove that he's a principled conservative, and that's Mo Brooks. Now, don't take my word for it, okay? You've heard a candidate talk to you. You should always trust but verify. So don't take my word for it. If you want to know where I stand, say, on border security, there are groups in Washington, D.C. that evaluate our voting records on border security issues. Numbers USA is one of those groups. Then there's another group called Federation of Americans for Immigration Reform. Both of those groups have graded my record in 10 years, number one out of 435 congressmen, not tied with somebody else, not top 1% or top 10%, but number one on border security issues. If you want to know how I am, say, on the Second Amendment, right to bear arms, well, again, I'll tell you I believe in the Second Amendment, but don't take my word for it. Look at the evaluations of the National Rifle Association and Gun Owners of America, and they've given me an A grade, your congressman from Alabama, an A grade every single year I've been in the United States Congress. If you're pro-life, well, I'm pro-life. You can look at my legislative record, but if that's not enough for the days I was in the Alabama legislature, look at what National Right to Life has to say, and they've also graded me an A across the board every year that I've been in the United States Congress. If you believe in foundational principles, if you believe in low taxes, if you believe in moral values, generally, there are lots of different groups that evaluate congressmen's voting records. Look at the American Conservative Union. Look at the National Taxpayers Union. Look at Citizens Against Government Waste. Concerned Citizens Against Government Waste, if I'm going to say it properly. Look at Eagle Forum. Look at Heritage Action, which focuses on foundational principles. And all of them have given me high marks over my decade-long term in the United States Congress. So if you're an establishment Republican, one of those wishy-washy people that just wants everybody to get along, I'm not your guy, okay? If you want a fighter who believes in the principles that have combined to make America the greatest nation in world history, I would submit that my record is unmatched by anybody else that's going to be in the Senate race. And so I would ask for your vote because we think alike.
Thank you, Congressman. We had a small disconnect with the Wi-Fi there just a second. We have another person that has another question here.
Hey, Congressman Brooks. My name is Phipps Fiore. I'm actually 17, so hopefully you'll be one of the first elections that I can ever get to vote for. Next year, I turn 18 in August. So I am interested, very interested in this race, in the Senate race. I had a question regarding China. As tensions continue to rise with China, and that was kind of evident a couple of days ago in Anchorage when the two officials from America and from China had their meeting, their first meeting between the two countries. And there was there were reports that China was bashing on us, and our translator was not able to even translate what they're saying. So the tensions are continuing to rise. And I know you were kind of outspoken, if I remember correctly, against the Confucius Institutes in America a couple of years ago. So what are things that you can do in Washington right now as a representative, and what are things that you could do as a senator and that you plan to do to ease tensions with China, to hopefully not create another war, but to also remain strong against China and to not let China surpass America as far as many things?
The only way to ease tensions with China is to concede defeat, okay? That's where we are. The Chinese have become very aggressive in a lot of different ways. They've become very aggressive militarily. I'm not sure if you're familiar with their military expansionism in the Sea of China. That is very troubling to South Korea, Japan, the Philippines, Vietnam. But they're actually taking reefs and destroying those reefs and turning them into islands by importing all the soil and dirt and concrete that is necessary to turn them into military bases. That is very disconcerting to China's neighbors around the South China Sea. They're also dramatically expanding their technological capabilities in their military, such that in some weapon systems, they might even be ahead of the United States of America, and we're playing catch up. They would not be doing that unless they wanted to assert their military prowess in ways that probably are not to the good of the United States of America or any of China's neighbors. Another thing that they're doing is they are, through unfair trade practices, taking about $400 billion a year, billion as in boy, $1 billion a year from our economy to their economy. Now, that's our trade deficit, roughly speaking, with China each of the previous years on average. And that's $400 billion a year that is no longer the United States, that is no longer helping American citizens live better lives. So China is very aggressive in a lot of different ways. They're attacking our military and our citizenry, our infrastructure indirectly through the internet, where they're launching these internet cyber attacks, and they do it on a regular basis. How extensive is open question. They're engaging in espionage in the United States of America, where they're trying to steal our military secrets by any means that they can do so. And then you've got the Confucius Institutes, which are propaganda organs for the Communist Chinese Party, and to some degree are also utilized for espionage purposes. Now, there are about 40, 45 Confucius Institutes that have been shut down by various states and universities across the United States of America. Those who really understand the threat that these facilities pose to our country. But unfortunately, Troy University and Alabama A&M University continue to help the Communist Chinese Party by keeping those Confucius Institutes open. And to just to kind of give you an idea as to how China doesn't believe in a level playing field, are there any George Washington or Thomas Jefferson or other American institutes in China that allow us to share with the Chinese people our belief systems, our government, our Bill of Rights, our Constitution? Absolutely not. There's no reciprocity whatsoever. It's a one-way street, and we've got to stop these things from being a one-way street. So with that as a backdrop, let me talk about the Communist Chinese Party in a more generic sense. Their belief system is the enemy of our belief system. We believe in the people voting to choose their elected officials, who in turn choose the destiny of our country. They don't. They can't stand it. They don't want it in their country, the Communist Chinese Party, and they stamp out, sometime with executions, anyone who advocates being a republic. We have a Bill of Rights that protects our citizens from the power of the government. You've got the First Amendment with freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of religion, freedom to assemble, freedom to petition your government to redress your grievances. You've got the Second Amendment, right to bear arms. You've got subsequent amendments relating to improper searches and seizures and the right against self-incrimination, right to a speedy trial, right to a jury by your peers. The Communist Chinese Party hates all of those things with the possible exception of one. And this is somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but they might give you a speedy trial where you're arrested in the afternoon, you're tried at midnight, and you're sentenced or executed in the morning. That's their definition of a speedy trial. So everything that we stand for and believe in the United States of America to a very large degree is the exact opposite of their top-down managed system where the elitists, those who are in charge of the government, those who are in charge of the Communist Chinese Party, live like kings, while the other 90% of the Chinese population is in effect slaves for the 10% that govern that country. So we don't want to go there. And our systems literally are the exact opposite of each other. And we can hope for coexistence,
But I think what you saw in Alaska was an effort on the part of the Communist Chinese Party leadership to determine how far and how fast they could push Joe Biden to see if he would fold like a deck of cards, a house of cards. And I don't know where we're going to end up, but certainly with Donald Trump, who was a strong voice, you did not see the Chinese Communist Party trying to engage in these kind of tactics. But at the same time, we have to understand that Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, has had business dealings with the Communist Chinese Party that in part have helped make Hunter Biden fairly wealthy, not just China, but also some places in Eastern Europe, Southwest Asia. So we'll see how all this plays out. But I'm one of those who believes that we have to be aggressive with the Communist Chinese Party, that we cannot continue to send our money to the Communist China and thereby, with that money, empower them to build up a military that may be a threat to the whole world. That just doesn't make sense to me.
Okay, David.
We lost.
David, are you there? I can see him, but I can't hear him, Congressman. I don't know if they're having technical problems, but I'll tell you what.
Well, Rusty, I can hear you fine.
Well, I can see you. How about, can you see me?
I can see you.
I'm sorry.
I can see Dave.
Tell you what, we'll take a quick, he just dropped off. I think they're having some internet issues out there. We'll take a quick break. And we'll come right back, and we'll return to this town hall meeting with Mo Brooks and David Ernest out there at Mr. Gus's in just moments. So nobody go away. Just stay right where you are. We'll be right back after these important messages on the Health and Wealth Show.
This is your roving reporter, and I'm talking today with an Imperial Stormtrooper.
Hello!
Now, I understand you work on the Death Star.
Oh, well, I did until it blew up, man, you know?
I see. But you're still employed by the Empire.
Oh, that's right, man. As a matter of fact, I'm on my way to pick up my paycheck right now.
I see. And here, long, long ago, in a galaxy far, far away, do you use a financial guy?
Yeah, man. We all use David Ernest, man. He is like the Obi-Wan Kenobi of finances, you know?
Well, isn't it hard to contact him way out here in the galaxy?
Oh, no, man. Just call him at 279-7431, and he will gladly help you take care of your money.
Well, just one more question. I understand that you stormtroopers are the worst marksmen in the galaxy.
Oh, no, man. That's not true, man.
Really?
Yeah, man. You see that droid over there?
Yes, I see him.
Watch this.
You missed him.
Oh, no, man. I was aiming at Darth Vader. He's way back over there.
Right.
Is your money working for you? Would you like higher returns with lower risks? David Ernest of Ernest Financial Retirement Rollovers has custom-tailored strategies. With over 30 years in the industry, let him help you achieve your dreams. Ernest Financial, where they are always earnest about your money. Visit retirewithernest.com or call 279-7431. That's 279-7431. Ernest Financial.
Picking, singing folk group. They sang the mountain ballads and the folk songs of our land. They were long on musical ability. Folks thought they would go far, but political incompatibility led to their downfall. Well, the one on the right was on the left, and the one in the middle was on the right, and the one on the left was in the middle, and the guy in the rear was a Methodist. This musical aggregation toured the entire nation, singing traditional ballads and the folk songs of our land. They performed with great virtuosity, and soon they were the rage, but political animosity prevailed upon the stage. Well, the one on the right was on the left, and the one in the middle was on the right, and the one on the left was in the middle, and the guy in the rear burned his driver's license. The curtain had ascended, a hush fell on the crowd, as thousands there were gathered to hear the folk songs of our land. But they took their politics seriously, and that night at the concert hall, as the audience watched deliriously, they had a free-for-all. Well, the one on the right was on the bottom, and the one in the middle was on the top, and the one on the left.
Hey, David, I can see Rusty.
The guy on his rear.
I can see you. I can hear Rusty. I can hear the music, but I can't hear. I can't hear Dave.
Now, this should be a lesson.
Rusty,
if you plan to start a folk group, don't go mixing politics with the folk songs of our land. Just work on harmony and diction. Play your banjo well. And if you have political convictions,
Rusty, can you hear me?
Keep them to yourself. Now the one on the left works in a bank, and the one in the middle drives a truck. The one on the right's an all-night DJ, and the guy in the rear got drafted.
Welcome back to the Health and Wealth Show and our special town hall meeting with Congressman Mo Brooks. And just a reminder, you can call David Ernest at 279-7431, or if you're in the Birmingham area, 205-479-0839. Or you can go see him right now at Mr. Gus's on the Atlanta Highway. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Ernest.
Thank you, and we have a lot of, this is a great show, Thank you all for listening, and thank you all for coming, and thank you, Congressman Brooks, for being here with us today.
My pleasure. Now, I can hear you. Can you see me and hear me?
Yes, we can.
Good.
And yes, you look quite lovely.
Loud and clear. Okay, now we have one more question here. Do we still have the telephone question person on hold? No, they
dropped
off. Okay, that's okay. So we have one question here. Go ahead and identify yourself.
How you doing, Councilman Bruce? My name is Willie Hart. I have a couple of questions. For years, we've been hearing about insurance reform and doing something about the cost of medical, the high increasing cost of medical bills. How are you going to address that issue while you're in office? As well as, what is your opinion on the George Floyd situation?
I don't have any opinion on George Floyd other than to suggest that whatever justice is, I hope that is what happens in that court of law. I've been in court lots of times, and I have been in court long enough to know that you can't trust the news media to actually describe what happened, and I will defer to that jury and that judge to listen to all the evidence that I'm not privy to, and hopefully they will come up with a fair and just verdict, whatever that may be. If it's a murder, it's a murder. If it's a manslaughter, if it's a manslaughter. If it's an acquittal, if that's what the law requires, then that's what they should do. And I think that's the way we ought to handle most of these matters that go into litigation, where really the details, the knowledge, the intent of the different people who are involved, who actually saw it firsthand, they are the ones who should be in the best position to render a decision. And we can only pray that they do whatever is just, again, whatever that may be, because I don't know, not being privy to all the information, all the circumstances, and all the evidence. When it comes to insurance and medical costs, let me tell you, if you want higher costs than anything, by and large, get the federal government involved in it. Okay, that's more often than not is gonna drive up costs either directly or indirectly. How do I say indirectly? What do I mean by that? Well, when the federal government subsidizes products, which give an artificial effect on pricing, that doesn't mean that the cost of that product has really gone down, because now you have higher taxes that you have to pay for in order to pay for that subsidy. And of course, along the way, you've got the federal government bureaucracy that's got their hand in the till. They have to be paid. And so the net cost of that product has gone up substantially, although it may not be reflected in the price that you pay at the pump
or at a grocery store or at a Walmart or what have you, let me assure you that price is there based on the taxes that we're paying. Now, when it comes to healthcare, I believe in the doctor-patient relationship. I would much prefer that doctors and patients make the decisions. And I am absolutely convinced that if you got the federal government out of this business, then I think that you would see prices for healthcare drop considerably. And without the federal government being involved, I think you would see that citizens would be in a much better position to be able to afford the healthcare that they need. There are some things that the federal government can do by way of example. We could mandate interstate competition of insurance companies so that there won't be any monopolies. And that competition, hopefully, would force those insurance companies to cut their profit margins somewhat as they try to attract business by charging lower rates for the people who pay for those insurance premiums. We'll have to see how that works out. Another thing that we might could do at the federal government level is require that there be one price for whatever their service is, not some kind of floating price where different people are charged different amounts. By way of example, if you're getting your medical bills paid for by Blue Cross Blue Shield, they pay substantially less than an individual pays who doesn't have insurance. And that's in part because of bargaining power, but it'd be akin to where we go to Walmart and you want to buy a gallon of milk. Don't you think everybody should pay the same price for that gallon of milk? I do. And that would dramatically lower the cost of healthcare when you don't have insurance and you go to a physician's office or to a hospital. And when I say dramatically, I've seen some of the bills that people get, and then I've seen some of the bills that insurance companies get for the exact same procedure. And you might be looking at a 50, 60, or 70, 80% discount in the price that the insurance company pays because of their superior bargaining position, as opposed to what Joe or Jane Citizen is billed when they don't have insurance and they get that huge price tag that so many people are so upset about when they receive them. So I could agree to push through Congress a requirement that whatever you charge one person has to be what you charge everyone, and whatever you charge an insurance company or pay to an insurance company, that also has to be what you expect from a private citizen who does not have that insurance. I simply don't like the idea of different people, for whatever reason, being charged different prices for healthcare.
Exactly. Congressman, we have a call on hold. I think, Rusty, can you patch that call through to Congressman Brooks so he can ask the question?
We're going to see what happens here. Bobby, you there? It's Bobby D on the
phone. Yes, sir. How you doing, Mr. Brooks?
I'm doing well. How about yourself today?
Oh, good. I'm just so proud of you for standing with Mr. Trump.
I'd be feeling a little bit better if we shot free throws better at the University of Alabama.
Me too.
That was painful.
It was a great season.
It was a great season,
nonetheless. But I just wanted to ask you, you know, the liberal media, they're going to slight you and slander you just like they always do. And I want to know, you've got to have a plan. Got to have a plan, because you know how they are. They are dirty, and I'm praying for you, and I'm voting for you. You've got my support, and I hope you've got to win. You're a man.
Well, I'm going to do my part, and when it comes to whoever the Democrats put forth in the general election, we're going to beat them like a drum, okay? And you may ask, oh, that's just bravado. That's a little bit of boasting. How do you know that? Well, because I've been doing it for 14 elections. Let me give you a little bit of historical background. In 1982, when I ran for the legislature, we were outnumbered in the legislature 136-4. That's all the Republicans there were. And I was able to be the point of the spear in the northern third of the part of the state and became the first Republican elected to the legislature in a long, long time, and the only one in 1982. The first time that a Republican has won in Alabama House District 18. Then we had a court-ordered redistricting, so I had to run again in 1983. And we beat the Democrats again with 80-something percent of the vote to become the first Republican in history elected in Alabama House District 10. Passed through the legislature, passed through the county commission, let's go to Congress. In Congress in 2010, I was the first Republican elected in Alabama's 5th congressional district in 136 years. Okay, so, and since then I beat them 5 more times. So I'm used to having the fake news media against me where they just make up stuff. Fortunately, at least in the Tennessee Valley, people know me well enough to know who's telling the truth. And I promise you, if the Alabama citizenry will give me the opportunity to rebut the scurrilous lies of the fake news media and the socialists, we'll beat them like a drum. All I need is the ability to get that message out to rebut whatever it is that they accuse me of. And the public will go, that Mo Brooks is right, and those other people are wrong, and I don't like them lying about Mo Brooks. And up in the Tennessee Valley, I still have that kind of testiness with the fake news media up here and with the socialists, and they just create stuff out of thin air, okay? But we beat them. And that's what I pledge to do if I'm the Republican nominee for this United States Senate seat. And not only that, I think you can probably discern from my attitude in all this that I'm a fighter. I'm not going to be one of those couch potato people. I'm not going to be one of those senators or congressmen when the battle gets hot and the bullets are flying where I'm cowering in a foxhole. I believe in taking the fight to the socialists. They are trying to undermine our country. They are certainly trying to undermine our moral values, the compass that guides us to do the right thing with the power that we have as a nation. And I believe that our country is worth fighting for, and I'm going to fight them tooth and nail. So they'll know Mo Brooks is in the United States Senate, much like they know that I'm in the House of Representatives, where I was a founding member of the House Freedom Caucus. That's the principal conservative fighting group of the Republican Conference. Again, we're not the ones that are part of the Surrender Caucus. We're the Freedom Caucus. And if you saw my effectiveness anywhere, you saw it over the last 5 or 6 months, where I'm the one that started the fight against the voter fraud and election theft effort of the socialists in the November 2020 elections. And for the first few weeks, it was pretty lonely. It was me against the world, and the people who were apt to agree with me, they were silent. And I was getting eviscerated by the socialists, eviscerated by the fake news media. But after everything was said and done, after I'd laid out the case, after I'd given 9 House floor speeches virtually every time I could, a 5-minute speech on January the 6th, we got up to 140-something congressmen and senators who agreed with my effort and voted to reject the Electoral College submissions of Arizona and Pennsylvania for one reason and one reason only. Their voting systems were so unreliable as to be untrustworthy, and as such, we should not ratify them, and we tried to prevent that from happening. Unfortunately, we didn't have enough Republicans that we needed in the House. About 2/3 of the House Republicans voted to reject the submittals of Arizona and Pennsylvania. That means about 1/3 voted to keep it. Well, in the Senate and the GOP delegation, about 85% of the senators voted for voter fraud and election theft. And that's one of the reasons why I'm running for the United States Senate. We need more principled conservatives over there, where an individual can magnify their ability to stop bad legislation, to kill bad treaties, to prevent nomination confirmations for judicial positions or executive branch positions. And that's what I pledge to you I'll do. And again, how do you know I'll do it? Because my track record in the Senate, in the House of Representatives. And if all that's not enough, the very fact that the socialists and the fake news media and even established Republicans attack me nonstop, that ought to tell you something about who they don't want in the United States Senate. So if you disagree with those three groups, then Mo Brooks is your guy. How do you know that? Because they're in effect telling you that I'm your guy because of the way in which they come after me so far, fortunately, unsuccessfully.
Very good. Congressman, another question here. Can you identify yourself?
Honor, Congressman, to speak to you tonight. My name is Rob Pinkston from Montgomery, Alabama.
Hey, Rob.
I've got 2 questions. We appreciate you coming on and doing this live with us. Not too many people have the guts to do that anymore. The 2 senators we currently have in Washington, how's your relationship with working relationship with them? And also the COVID cover-up that the United Nations and the World Health Organization and the Communist Chinese, what is your take on that?
Well, first I'll touch on the 2 senators. It's a pleasure working with Tommy Tuberville, and of course I've worked with Richard Shelby over the past decade. Quite frankly, you're going to find that we all have different value systems and we're going to disagree on occasion. but far more often than not, Richard Shelby and I have agreed on votes, not always, particularly on spending. That should surprise nobody. And Tommy Tuberville and I to date, I don't know of any votes that he's cast that I would have cast any differently. But to be fair, I've not examined his voting record. I've been rather busy in the House trying to fight all the things that Nancy Pelosi is shoving down our throats. When you talk about the World Health Organization and the Communist Chinese Party, let me just tell you what I think happened. Based on the information I've seen, based on the classified briefings I've been privy to, I'm on the House Armed Services Committee, plus we got some classified briefings that were for the whole Congress on COVID-19. In my judgment, this is the most probable thing that happened. The Communist Chinese Party was experimenting in their bioweapons lab in Wuhan, China, and they altered some kind of COVID-19 spore, whatever you want to call those things. It was altered in that bioweapons lab, and then it got loose either from a worker at the lab that got infected, or heaven forbid, intentionally. I hope it wasn't intentionally, that it wasn't a military experiment of some kind, but the only people who know for sure are the Communist Chinese Party members. Now, the highest probability, but not necessarily certainty, is that a worker at that lab got infected. The information that I've been privy to suggests that the containment systems in that lab were not up to snuff, that they weren't what was and is required in the United States of America. So that suggests to me that that's the most likely cause of the creation of COVID-19 and the escape of COVID-19. In addition to that, we've had one person who worked at the Wuhan bioweapons lab and has come forward publicly and has said that it was man-made and that it escaped somehow. But of course, the Communist Chinese Party, they're going to deny it. The problem with the Communist Chinese Party is they have no credibility. They will lie when it suits them. They'll tell the truth when it suits them, and they have no way of knowing the difference. But in my opinion, based on all the evidence I have seen, it appears to me that COVID-19 was man-made, that virus. It was altered in the lab. Probably weaponized to some degree where it became more contagious and more deadly, and then escaped. And also in my judgment, if the United Nations and the other countries of the world had the guts that they ought to have, they would hold the Communist Chinese Party liable for all of the damage, injuries, and death that were caused by what happened at the Wuhan bioweapons lab. That would be compensation that a lot of people around the globe right now are very much in need of.
We've only got 3 minutes left, so we're going to have this question very fast.
There's a young man sitting across from me that's going to be voting for the first time. The first time I voted was for Ronald Reagan. How optimistic are you for the state of Alabama, our economic growth? I'm sorry to change gears, but I really... How about it? How are things going for us as a state, and where could we go with your leadership?
Well, the district I've represented over the past decade, we've been going great guns. Kind of unfortunately, we've been doing so well that housing prices are starting to skyrocket here in the Madison County, Huntsville metropolitan area, Limestone County, Morgan County, surrounding counties. So there is an adverse effect of this population growth. Our roads are a little bit more clogged than some of us would like, but at the same time, there's a lot of prosperity, and that's even during the COVID-19. So I'm pleased to report that we in the Tennessee Valley, the district that I represent, we've been doing quite well. Economically, how is Alabama going to do? I think that things look well, particularly in the extremes of the state, the northern tier and Baldwin-Mobile counties. They look very well. Lee County, Montgomery, that area looks like it's going to prosper well. You've got Tuscaloosa County with the University of Alabama also doing well, in part because the university is there. And then you've got the suburbs of Birmingham and Jefferson County. They seem to be doing well. The places that are doing the least well are the places that don't have direct connections to the interstate system. So it's become quite clear that interstates, where you transport the commerce, the goods and services, They're very important. And so we need to keep our interstate system very well maintained. To the extent we can, we need to expand it, because that's the artery over which commerce flows. But the real key for the state of Alabama is, how does our country do? And if we go into a national insolvency and bankruptcy, in part because we're blowing through the $30 trillion debt mark later this year, well, then Alabama's gonna be hurting like we've never hurt before, with the possible exception of the Civil War. And the United States of America economically is also gonna be hurting worse than with the possible exception of any time other than the that being the Civil War. So we've got some challenges in front of us, particularly at a budgetary level. Short term, it looks better because we're spending money out the kazoo. Long term, we're in a problem area when our creditors decide they don't want to loan us more money. And I don't know what's going to trigger the credit cutoff, but when that day comes, it's going to be pretty tough on us, because we've got far too many debt junkies in Washington, D.C.
Amen on that one. Thank you very much, Congressman Brooks. We're coming to the end of the show. I think this is about, we've really enjoyed this. This has been a great success. How many here think this was a great success? All right. So we're looking forward, Congressman, to doing this many more times with you, because you know why? We want you in office, right?
Well, please go to mobrooks.com, mobrooks.com, if you want to help financially or as a volunteer. That's what it's going to take.
That's right. Thank you very much. And Rusty, are you there?
No, I'm wide awake. Yes, I've been.
I put him to sleep.
No, well, wake up. No, I've been hanging on every word. And I think those folks out there who showed up, how many do you have? Can you say?
About 20.
Well, they ought to give themselves a big...
30, we closed the door, didn't let them in.
Well, give themselves a big hand, because they came out.
Yeah,
and
give yourselves a big hand. All right. There's a little pizza left here, two or three pizzas.
Yeah.
Well, you want me to break them to you?
You'll mail them to me. but I thought the show sounded really good, and we'll probably rerun it toward the end of the week.
Yeah, and it'll be broadcast in Birmingham Sunday at 4 p.m. on 99.5, too.
There you go. All right, so I guess we're done.
Adios.
Thank you, Congressman Brooks.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much for staring at me for an hour. And thanks to everybody who came out, and thanks for everybody who tuned in to the Health and Wealth Show. We'll see you tomorrow night right here. And Congressman, I don't know if he's still listening or not, but I picked this one out especially for him. We'll see you tomorrow night on the Health and Wealth Show. And I didn't push the right button. Maybe I need that.
You need
pizza
to learn which button to push. Well, you only got one.
Only got one.
Well, I think my dog's a Democrat. And it breaks my heart to have to say an ugly thing like that. But there's a big old pile of evidence.